Blog Talk Radio.
I am the nation. I was born on July 4th, 1776, and the Declaration of Independence is my birth certificate. The bloodlines of the world run in my veins because I offered freedom to the oppressed. I am many things and many people. I am the nation. I am 200 million living souls and the ghost of millions who have lived and died for me. I am Nathan Hale and Paul Revere. I stood at Lexington and fired the shot heard round the world. I'm Washington, Jefferson, Patrick Henry. I'm John Paul Jones, the Green Mountain Boys, and Davy Crockett. I'm Lee and Abe Lincoln. I remember the Alamo, the Maine, and Pearl Harbor. When freedom called, I answered and stayed until it was over there. I left my heroic dead in Flanders Fields and in the steaming jungles of Vietnam. I am the Brooklyn Bridge, the wheatlands of Kansas, and the granite hills of Vermont. I am the coal fields of the Virginias and Pennsylvania, the fertile lands of the West, the Golden Gate and Grand Canyon. I sprawl from the Atlantic to the Pacific, 3 million square miles. I'm more than 3 million farms. I'm forest, field, mountain, and desert. I'm quiet villages, and I'm cities that never sleep. You can look at me and see Ben Franklin walking down the streets of Philadelphia. I'm Babe Ruth in the World Series. I'm 130,000 schools and colleges and 326,000 churches where my people worship God as they please. I'm a ballot dropped in a box. I am an editorial in a newspaper. And I'm a letter to a congressman. I'm Thomas Edison, Albert Einstein. I'm Horace Greeley, Will Rogers, and the Wright brothers. I'm George Washington Carver, Daniel Webster, and Jonas Salk. I'm Walt Whitman, Thomas Paine, Tom Sawyer, and Walt Disney. Yes, I am the nation, and these are the things that I am. I was conceived in freedom, and God willing, in freedom I'll spend the rest of my days. May I possess always the integrity, the courage, and the strength to keep myself unshackled, to remain a citadel of freedom and a beacon of hope to the entire world. I am the nation.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Patriot Education. My name is Terry Rowland. I'm your hostess for this evening. And you are the nation, ladies and gentlemen. It is you and I and every other citizen of this country who makes up the body politic of the United States of America. And that is both a tremendous privilege and a great responsibility. As always, we are brought to you through the good offices of www.patriotfamilies.com, a group of people who do understand and believe and act upon the fact that they are the nation. Our topic for this evening, ladies and gentlemen, is Common Core and the Assassination of Literature. I received an email this morning, a newsletter that I get on a daily basis from the Heritage Foundation, an organization that I have a great deal of respect for, as their function as a think tank is to preserve and illuminate the conservative values of the United States of America. They are constitutionalists. They believe and look for ways to ensure that following our Constitution is the best and only way to keep our nation the great beacon of hope and freedom that it has always been since its inception. In this today's Morning Bell, there was reference to an article by a Sandra Stotsky, who is a professor of education reform at the University of Arkansas, and who previously was the senior associate commissioner at the Massachusetts Department of Education and in charge of the development of Massachusetts's widely recognized, extraordinarily good literature and English language arts program in the Bay State. Professor Stotsky is talking about in this article, the title of which is Common Core Standards, Devastating Impact on Literary Study and Analytical Thinking. And in the article, the professor discusses the fact that the Common Core creators none of whom are practicing educators in the public schools, by the way, have made the assumption that language arts programs standards for the entire nation should be based primarily with a minimum of 50% on reading factual and nonfiction materials. And this factual and nonfiction material is basically politically correct garbage that promotes global warming, promotes diversity from the progressive point of view, which means there is no right or wrong, there's only difference, and there is no bad behavior, only communication we don't understand. In other words, the English language arts curriculum under Common Core will be mostly very short infomercials for the progressive point of view. The justification for this revamping of language arts curricula from the progressive promoters of Common Core is that these new standards in language arts will make all students quote-unquote college ready. And I'm going to quote Professor Stotsky. She says, "This extravagant promise was and remains undergirded by a belief that a heavy dose of informational or nonfiction reading, 50% of reading instructional time in the English class at every grade level, will result in greater college readiness than a concentrated study of complex literature in the secondary English class will." Which, to take that out of educationalese, 50% of your time in English class should be spent in high school on reading quote-unquote informational articles or factual articles, which again are progressive infomercials, because the study of literature is not going to prepare you for entering college. And the article goes on to state, "Why do Common Core's architects believe that reading more nonfiction and, quote, informational, unquote, texts in English classes and in other high school classes will improve students' college readiness? Their belief seems to be based on what they see as the logical implication of the fact that college students read more informational than literary texts. However, there is absolutely no empirical research to suggest that college readiness is promoted by informational or nonfiction reading in high school, English classes, or in mathematics and science classes. In fact, the history of the secondary English curriculum in 20th century America suggests that the decline in readiness for college reading stems in large part from an increasingly incoherent, less challenging literature curriculum from the 1960s onward. This decline has been propelled by the fragmentation of the year-long English course into semester electives, the conversion of junior high schools into middle schools, and the assignment of easier, shorter, and contemporary texts, often in the name of multiculturalism." I have watched that go on, ladies and gentlemen. I have seen that ever since the roughly the beginning of the complete downgrading of our school systems in the late 1960s through the mid to late 1970s. My younger sister, who is 15 years younger than I, graduated from high school in 1979. And when she was in school, that was when they started making your English broken up into quarterly choices of which English course you were going to take. And it was the student's choice with quote-unquote advice from the guidance counselor. And the courses, the specific quarterly courses, had a difficulty level rating of from 2 to 5, 2 being the easiest, 5 being the most difficult. Well, my sister brought home her selection materials, and my parents were looking at it and were somewhat baffled by this. And having worked as a private tutor and dealt with students in the public school systems, I could elucidate for them exactly what this meant. And my sister had picked out difficulty levels that none of which passed a 3, because like every other kid in high school, she'd like to do as little work as possible and get good grades. Well, I explained to my parents exactly what they were going to be getting for this, and one of the titles of the courses that she was going to choose was People Talk Funny, which was a course on how different places and different ethnic groups and different demographics use different forms of grammar to communicate. In other words, the beginning of teaching her how to be fluent in Ebonics, which hadn't actually gotten the name yet. So my father basically laid down the law to my sister and said, "Oh, no, you don't, honey. Anything below a 5, you don't get to take." So my sister took actual, real English classes, where her term paper was on Jane Eyre, which I helped her with because it was one of my favorite novels, and I read it when I was 14. Nowadays, like my friend Linda says, some of the curriculum on Common Core is based on feelings and how this will make people or society feel, instead of understanding the mechanics of writing and expressing yourself with clarity and beauty in your native language. The whole feel-good, touchy-feely, no bad behavior, only communication we don't understand, progressive crap is going to be what your kids are going to be learning all the way through high school in supposedly making them college-ready. Oh, yes, it'll make them college-ready, all right. It'll have them pre-programmed to swallow every lie liberal college professors want to shove down their delicate little teenage throats. And that's exactly what Common Core is for, ladies and gentlemen. Professor Stotsky's article goes on to express the need for an understanding and an exposure to classic literature. Everything going back to Shakespeare's plays, to Chaucer's Canterbury Tales, to the Doomsday Book, to translations of Beowulf from the Saxon sagas. If you do not have exposure to the way language creates another world, another view of the world, the subtleties of characterization, the twists and turns of motivation and events and how they connect, the ability to stay focused on a novel that's longer than 6 pages, how are our kids going to be able to go to original sources for history, or for the bases upon which this nation's lawmakers are supposed to be creating legislation? The quickest and easiest way to give Congress and the presidency more power than they were ever intended to have is to create an entire electorate who can't read the United States Constitution and understand what it says. The study of literature, ladies and gentlemen, for those of you who really didn't enjoy reading in school and really didn't think it was necessary to read dumb stuff like Sir Walter Scott or Charlotte Bronte or The Way of All Flesh or any of the other things that you were not interested in because they didn't describe who was wearing what to the prom next week. Without exposure to a vocabulary of more than 250 words, 70% of which are profane, how do you expect your children and your grandchildren to be able to understand anybody other than you want fries with that and figure out that yes means I do want fries and no means I don't? If you don't expose children to reading for content and understanding, as well as stirring their imaginations and introducing them to new concepts, what you have are programmed robotic members of the Borg collective, which is exactly what the progressive element in our government wants. Studying literature requires a student to investigate and understand things like metaphor, figurative language, character development, plot development. It requires them to use analytical thinking. Obviously, this is a danger, ladies and gentlemen, to the progressive utopia. because analytical thinking makes you stop and say, wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense. Or wait a minute, if we do that, what will the consequences be down the road? Happy, contented Borg collective members don't need to think because that is done for them by the central authority. And this is what Common Core is promoting, ladies and gentlemen, under the guise of saying we're going to standardize education so no student throughout the country, no matter where they live or what their economic background or their ethnicity or whatever other thing they want to track, is going to be told exactly the same thing, taught in exactly the same way, at exactly the same pace, with exactly just enough information to make them ready to be dumped into the university system, where the vast majority of them will flunk out before they finish the first semester of their freshman year. But we got them to college. We got them to college. And that is the only thing that the progressives want you to think of. They want you to think that just going to college is going to make you into the successful, wealthy doctor, lawyer, Indian chief that the progressive propaganda is telling you you deserve to be. Progressives do not care about people as individuals, ladies and gentlemen. Progressives give lip service to individuality by bleeding and crying for those who have difficulty coping with life's problems and that we need to help them. What they are helping them to is the modern equivalent of Adolf Hitler's happy little gas chambers and his eugenics program, which immediately decided they were going to exterminate anybody who was Jewish, as well as people who were handicapped physically, mentally, or emotionally. If you track children and you place them in the IEP track and you nurture and nurse them through 12 years of public schools, telling them that we'll make it easy, we'll give you a great education, you'll feel good about yourself, you'll have a high school diploma, and then the minute they turn 18, you dump them on society and say, sorry, you're no longer qualified for disability payments. This is exactly what they are doing, ladies and gentlemen. They are creating an underclass. They are creating a group of people who cannot think for themselves, who must be told when to breathe, when to spit, when to use the restroom, when to change their clothes, when to take a shower, what to eat, where to eat it, and how much they should have. When you take away the exposure to the ideas and the universality of the human condition that is expressed in classical literature, and you imply to children of any age that, oh, you don't need to know this, you are closing them into a cage from which it will take dynamite to escape, both metaphorically and literally, because you are telling them that there is no reason to use your mind. We will think for you. My friend Linda says, can you imagine the enlightenment of the youth if they could actually read Aristotle? Yeah. Or anything, even reading Sir Walter Scott, who went out of fashion in the 1930s, for heaven's sake. But still, if you understand enough about what literature does for us, if you have any exposure to anything in the written word that isn't a laundry list or an employment form or a fill out a credit card application, then you know that if you've ever been introduced to any book at all the way from childhood classics like, you know, Three Little Kittens Who've Lost Their Mittens, all the way up through Les Misérables, it opens the door of imagination, and it cannot but increase your ability to use your language effectively. My friend Linda's mentioned so many favorites of mine: Gone with the Wind, Grapes of Wrath, Little Women, the Anne of Green Gables saga, all of the Nancy Drew mysteries, if you wish, the Hardy Boys collections, the Edward Eger's Magic Tales, E. Nesbitt and her wonderful fantasy tales, Five Children and It, the fairy tales from the Andrew Lang series of fairy books, Isaac Asimov's I, Robot and the succeeding novels, Arthur C. Clarke, Robert Heinlein's Stranger in a Strange Land, which I read in college. So many wonderful worlds out there that our children are being told that they don't need to explore because they don't really have any value. This is the underlying concept. Like my friend Rod says, teaching kids to read, what a concept. That is what they do not want us to do. They do not want our children exposed to anything except quote-unquote non-fictional, factual reading material that is nothing more or less than progressive infomercials in print. And I see how they deal with anything these kids are supposed to be actually reading. Remember, I work in a middle school, ladies and gentlemen, and have done so for 6 years now. And I have watched what is the common excuse for reading. It is assigned pages in a textbook with printed notes to go along with it, in which there are paragraphs taken from the text with blanks in them and a word bank of words that go in the blanks with no extras, and the student is supposedly reading the textbook and putting the words in the blanks and understanding what they've read. They aren't, ladies and gentlemen. Any idiot who can recognize the letters is going to hunt and peck for this word in this sentence and write it in. And they will get an A, and they will have absolutely no idea what the sense of the material is. I know, because I have dealt with kids doing this. There is no understanding of what they're reading. My friend Linda said it's just like and Rod says in the chat room, if they're taught to read, then they could even think, and that would not be good for Democrats. No, it wouldn't. Not for the progressive Democrats that are infesting our government right now. And Linda's response is just as apropos. Just like slaves, you can't teach them to read either. And that, ladies and gentlemen, should scare the you-know-what out of everybody out there listening to me. Because in the 19th century, it was illegal to teach your slave to read, because if you did, he might get an idea that freedom was a good thing. And we are seeing the exact same mentality, only now it isn't just denigrating and demonizing people of African descent who were sold, okay, by other Africans to white traders and brought and sold again to southern plantation owners. No, it's not just a method to keep a subculture enslaved. It's a method to keep every single cotton-picking one of us totally enslaved. If you cannot decipher and understand the wealth of ideas and concepts available in literature, whether it's fiction or nonfiction, if the only thing that you are ever taught that has importance are infomercials, are we not enough consumer oriented? I want this because they told me it was great on television. They've set the stage, ladies and gentlemen. They have set the stage for enslaving the population because we have been complacent and we have believed that our elected representatives actually have our best interests as individual citizens at heart. They do not. They don't give a rat's left whisker for you or me or any other constituent unless we are noisy enough that it might threaten their ability to continually become reelected and to live off of the public trough. When we start making noise, ladies and gentlemen, and their jobs are in jeopardy, then we can get some form of government that vaguely resembles the Constitution that was given to us in 1789. Well, at least that's when it was adopted and ratified by enough states to make it the law of the land. But if we do not speak up, if we do not raise our voices, if we do not stand up and say, wait a minute, this isn't right, then we get the government that we have earned. And if we do not stand up and say this is not right with Common Core and the dumbing down of our children, if we do not stop believing that an A on a report card actually means what you think it does, if you grew up prior to the dumbed down of the 1960s, which I did, unfortunately, it's going to take us little old ladies and little old men to stand up and scream. Because we can still remember, ladies and gentlemen, what it meant to get an education. Those of us who went to school before the progressive, let's make learning fun ideas of the 60s that were put into place in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, we remember that a classroom was a place where you were supposed to be paying attention to the teacher, not your cell phone or your next door neighbor, or daydreaming or drawing or throwing things. Because if you did any of those things, of course we didn't have cell phones, you were sent to the principal's office, your parents were called, and it was explained to you very clearly that such behaviors were not permitted in school. And if they continued, you would not be permitted to return to school. The whole screwed up situation we've got in public school, like every other pendulum swing of reform and let's make it better and let's make everybody happy, has swung so far to the left side of idiocy that it's going to take a major shove to get it unstuck and swung back somewhere near the middle. Of course, if pendulums remain in the middle, they don't move at all, and that kind of denies real progress, not progressive's definition, but real progress, finding something new, creating something new. That comes with movement and with change. Most conservatives are considered to be stick-in-the-muds, and you don't want anything to change because you don't want anybody else to have any power. You're just holding on to the reins because you don't want anybody who isn't one of you to take over. Well, anybody who is conservative knows that that's garbage. But then again, anybody who is conservative is probably fairly well educated. If you look at the educated idiots on the progressive side of the aisle and the undereducated idiots who follow them, my guess is that you will probably discover that most of the educated idiots would have difficulty figuring out where on the map of the United States Lexington, Kentucky was. Because if they were educated in the public school systems of the last 35 years, they probably were pushed into the let's go to college track and never learn geography. Oh yes, I had a student that I tutored like that. She was an A student was taking advanced placement courses, you know, college credit courses in English and history, and she couldn't find Florida on a map. And the reason she couldn't find it, she told me, was, well, I'm in advanced courses. I don't have to take geography. That was my head hitting the floor, ladies and gentlemen, metaphorically speaking. But that's the 1980s, ladies and gentlemen. That's the 1980s. The idea that there's any piece of knowledge that you don't have to know. Well, I don't need to know that. How in the name of all that is holy do you have any clue when or if you're going to need to know something? If you can see the future laid out crystal clear and everything falls into space exactly as you envision it from moment to moment, well, tell me how you did it and I will run as far as I can to get away from it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. My friend Rod reminded us of one of our current occupants of the White House. I dislike applying the title of president, even though he is, who couldn't remember how many states there were in the nation, and after all, he's a Harvard graduate. Oh, God. All 55 of them, I believe. First time I ever knew we had 55 states. Our current president is a prime example of just how good a college degree is at analytical, critical thinking, and actual intelligence. Unfortunately, I do not believe that our current president is all that bright. I know many people do, purely and simply because of his credentials and because he is an excellent orator and can recite a speech with passion and charisma and all of those other things. And yes, I've heard him speak, and yes, he is a brilliant speaker. So is a parrot. But a parrot has absolutely no clue what the words he's mouthing mean. I feel that we have been duped by the movers and shakers and the money people behind progressivism. And many people have been, because they have not been exposed to the kind of analytical thinking development that actually reading something other than a, you know, bus schedule would give them, bought into a one-word slogan that meant absolutely nothing. The idea being that somehow or other we were going to prove how unbiased and non-racist and incredibly open and amazingly, wonderfully modern and new we were by electing the first president of African descent. That, to me, is sadder than anything else. Because what got this man elected was the inability of the people who voted for him to think beyond sound bites and infomercials. He was the perfect candidate for the products of 30 years of dumbing down public education. He is an example of what you get when you teach children the way we have been doing it for the last 30 years. The fact that his signature achievement, the Affordable Care Act, is a miserable, dismal failure that is impossible to pay for, will destroy the economy, cut off people like me from life-sustaining treatment because I am too old to be valuable, and take everything that people who work for a living produce and use it to offer carrots and goodies to those who do not. and which even our elected representatives, not that they're that bright, are smart enough to know I don't want any. The whole thrust of public education, ladies and gentlemen, as it was envisioned by our founders, was to give every citizen, every child, the equal opportunity to learn. Because many of our founders were self-educated. They had to be. They did not come from wealthy backgrounds. And in those times, in the 18th century and before, education was the privilege of the wealthy, the gentry, the nobility, the wealthy bourgeois, the hereditary landed gentry. Those were the people who were educated. The average peasant type, the farmer, the city dweller, and the country folk, their education was minimal because it was their job to serve. They worked as housemaids or farm laborers or cooks or butlers or whatever. And there was nothing inherently wrong with that at all. The fact that they were not formally educated in the academic disciplines didn't deter them from making good livings for the time, caring for their families, and doing work that they were good at, and being recompensed for it. It was a very different society. You were expected to be well-educated if you were a member of the moneyed class, because you were going to be responsible for employing other people. So you had to know a good bit in order to employ them correctly, using their work and their labor efficiently, making sure that you understood how you needed to use them, whether it was on your plantations, like for Jefferson, or in your business, like Roger Sherman, or in the printing business, like Ben Franklin. You had to have education if you were going to rise above common labor. And if you were an intelligent person with the drive to succeed, you got that education any way you could. And the way that you got it primarily was by reading. Again, the most dangerous thing that you could do in the slaveholding South was teach a slave to read, because he'd get uppity and beyond his station, as they would have said in England or European countries in that time. When you teach a human being to read, to decipher the printed word, you give that human being access to all of the wisdom and experience and history of the human race. It's all out there. You also give them the ability to educate themselves as far and as high as their own desire for knowledge will take them. You open the door for the individual to follow his or her own star. This is anathema to progressives, ladies and gentlemen, because individualism is the death of progressivism. Do not be fooled by all the individually based learning. That's crap, I can tell you. What it means is jockeying things around so kids who aren't learning anything can get good grades on report cards that make the school look good and get through standardized testing so they get the federal funding for the new classroom building or teacher salary increases or staff increases or new carpeting or paying the electric bill. It isn't any more individualized learning helping that child achieve his or her personal best than it would be if I were sitting and reading Hamlet to my cats. For people who teach for a living, and who do it because they are driven to, because it is their calling, I feel I can speak for people like that because I'm one of them. And I work with a great many people who are like that. We are driven to teach. It's built in. It's genetically programmed or inherited or given to us by God, however you want to describe it. Teachers are born, not made. If you've ever watched a bunch of kids on a playground, there's always going to be one who's telling everybody else how to play the game. And that one is going to wind up being a teacher. No matter whether they're a teacher in a school, in an academic setting, or a teacher in a training program in a business, or a teacher in medical or scientific innovation, that kid is going to be a teacher. And because we are born to do it, because it is at the core of our being, our greatest joy is lighting that spark that gets our student, whoever they are, to know something today that they didn't know yesterday. But under the current federal interference in public schools, and I mean federal interference, because there is absolutely no constitutional basis for the Federal Department of Education. None. It should not have any authority whatsoever over public schools in any location in this nation, including Washington, D.C., which is a separate entity and has its own rules and its own laws. The creation of the Federal Department of Education was the signature filthy trick of the Carter administration. Because, like most progressives, Carter believed that it was government's job to make life perfectly safe and perfectly fair for everyone. Now, whether or not he sincerely believes that, I do not know. Even though I'm a teacher, I can't read minds yet. Believe me, it's assumed that I'm supposed to be able to, so I'll know exactly how to present material so that every child in a classroom of 28 understands it in exactly the same way. But no, I haven't gotten there yet. I have not been able to perform the Vulcan mind meld on any of my students. So I don't know whether Mr. Carter actually believes that it's possible for a government to make life perfectly fair and perfectly safe for everybody. If he does, I feel very sorry for him, as I have great compassion and pity for those who suffer from mental illness, because it is the definition of mental illness. Government cannot change human personality or human ability or human motivation or human desire or human emotion. Government can only use force to impose restriction upon society and its members. That is the only thing that government has the power to do and can do effectively. Government is force. Government tells you, if you do this, this will happen. And it will happen because government can exert force upon you. Economic force, by fining you. Physical force, by the use of police, National Guard, the armed forces. Emotional force, by the progressive method of brainwashing in schools, with the cooperation of the media, vilifying and demonizing those who disagree with whatever the government policy is at any given moment, the kind of name-calling and the kind of language that's used. Like my friend Rod says, the brown shirts, and that's, you know, the Hitler Youth, otherwise known as the Obamacare or Obama Youth or whatever the hell he calls it. Government is force. Governments cannot change human beings. They can change human behavior through the threat of force or the direct application of it. Government being force is the reason that our founding fathers wanted us to have a limited government. It is the reason that they did not want the federal government involved in local politics, state schools, state governments, state legislatures. That's why, I believe it was the 17th Amendment that allowed for direct election of senators. That's why that repealing that was so horrible. Because when the senators were chosen by the state legislatures, they were closer to the actual body politic they were representing. With direct election of senators, you get the mob psychology of pure democracy. And that's what pure democracy is. We do not have pure democracy, ladies and gentlemen, and our founders did not want us to have pure democracy. Pure democracy is when every individual member of a society votes on every decision for that society as a whole. It is chaos, and it is a popularity contest, and that's all it is. We have a representative republic. We were never intended to be pure democracy. The aphorism, I believe it was Franklin, of democracy is three wolves and a lamb deciding what's for lunch. Yeah, right. That's pretty much democracy. My friend Linda says we used to have a republic, but I'm not sure what it's morphed into. Well, right now it's morphed into an imperial presidency and an orgy of progressive, no, bad child. Go back home, sit down, suck your thumb in a corner, and we'll take care of you. And I have no idea what you call that, other than a nanny state. And believe me, if I am so glad that I never had a nanny, if that's how it was dealt with. The state isn't even a parent, for heaven's sake. The assumption that the state should be is another part of the progressive agenda. When we talk about public education, ladies and gentlemen, it isn't just the day-to-day, what's your kid learning, did they get an A, did he pass his test, is he going to the next grade? It's an atmosphere, and it is a laboratory, if you will. When your children are in school, they are away from your influence. For 7.5 hours per day, 5 days a week, for roughly 9 months out of the year, for approximately 12 years of their lives. Their formative years, to use a popular phrase. You have them until they're roughly five. And of course, if our current president gets his way, the state will take them over when they're like four, so that they can get them in preschool and start the indoctrination early enough. That means that you are, in effect, handing your child over to the government to teach. I don't know about you, but I have never really trusted the government's ability to teach me much of anything except extreme wariness. As in, wait a minute, let's look at that again, because that doesn't sound like it's possible. And that's about the length of my quote-unquote education from the government. My friend Rod says if they get good grades, then the important thing is to check and see what they're being graded on, and he's exactly correct. But too many parents out there have set aside their responsibility in order to achieve material success. And I do understand the desire to give our children every comfort, every new gadget, every wonderful thing they want. We want our kids to have things. We want our kids to be happy. We want them to have friends. We want them to have activities that they enjoy. And we want them to play and laugh and grow and learn. But when we hand them over to the public education system, and then we just sit back and say, oh, the teachers and the principals will take care of them. And I'll just say, how was school today? And they'll say, fine, Dad, and my duty is done. Then we have given our children away. We have handed them over. To government, which, as I said earlier, is force. We have, in effect, placed them in the equivalent of one of Mao Zedong's re-education labor camps. And I know there are people out there listening who are going to say, oh yes, this woman is crazy, she's completely nuts, she's viewing worst-case scenarios. Well, you may be right. I might be. I don't think I am. I believe that I'm clear-sighted, and I believe that I have enough life experience, both in and out of the educational milieu, to know what I'm talking about, because I have watched what has been done. I have watched the entitlement generation go through school, go through college, marry, produce children, and put into office people who do nothing but feed the entitlement mindset and destroy every principle upon which this nation was built. We believe, as Americans, as part of our culture, in the words of the Declaration of Independence, that all men were created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, and that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Being created equal means that we all come with the same human spirit in an individual life. It doesn't mean we will be equally strong, equally tall, equally smart, equally feeble, equally athletic, equally intellectual, equally anything other than human. It was considered a quote-unquote revolutionary concept because people in the 18th century believed, because they were taught in school and by their clergy, that certain people were created less equal than others. That somehow or other, if you were born into the nobility, you were automatically purer and greater. You were, to quote Lord Voldemort, pure blood. And pure blood's destiny is to rule over the rest of us muggles, because magic blood makes you inherently better than anyone else. The kind of equality that our founding fathers were talking about was not equal success or equal stuff in everybody's house, to quote Reverend Brainless Sharpton. It was the equality of the human spirit. The equality of the opportunity to fly as high and go as far as that spirit and those skills God gave you would take you, without the artificial restriction of blood status or economic background or ethnicity or any other limiting factor. And even our founding fathers, many of them, still believed that women were a lesser part of the species. John Adams' correspondence with Abigail was indicative of that, because Abigail was she was an 18th century feminist, believe me, a very, very bright, intelligent, articulate woman. And she used to tick off her husband royally. But because John wasn't exactly stupid, he would never have been attracted to a woman who was dumb. So he got what he paid for, pretty much. And like most men, back then and now, there are drawbacks to having an intelligent wife. She's not going to be very easily controlled. And that bit about love, honor, and obey, if you notice, very few marriage ceremonies have the obey in it anymore, because we finally figured out that, yes, we could stand on an equal footing with men. So even in our Founders' Day, this conception that some people were more equal than others existed. Yet they created, based on the idea of the equality of the human spirit, a form of government that carried this nation into the world we have now. And that world, in spite of all of the troubles and problems and so on and so forth, as Rod says, freedom and rights come at a price, and they cost something to keep. We are better off, ladies and gentlemen, as the ordinary American citizen sitting in his living room watching his television and drinking his beer, than every single human being who has lived before us going back 10,000 years. And this nation of ours and the people who inhabit it and the people who founded it have played a huge part in that incredible march toward the richest human society globally that man has ever seen. Because the understanding that the only creative force that will allow us to progress is that spirit we share with God. Our human spirit. That is the part of us that is in the image of our Creator, ladies and gentlemen, because we are creators too. But we don't create in groups, and we don't create by committee, and we don't create if we are educating our children to be contented drones, Borg collective members, or cogs in the progressive machine. We stagnate. I think it was Milton Friedman who said that if you put the federal government in charge of the Sahara Desert, in 2 years the world would be suffering from a shortage of sand. You cannot make everybody the same, ladies and gentlemen. And this is the progressive definition of equal. Please do not be fooled by all of their rhetoric about how they care about the disadvantaged and they want everybody to have equal stuff. No, they don't. The only equality that they want is the equality of subservient drones. They are not interested in sharing power. Very few people who have a great deal of it are. Even those of us who have very little power really don't want to share it. I do not want to give someone else power over my medical decisions, for example. I don't have power over anybody but me, but I jealously guard that power that I do have, and this is the nature of power. Power and force are analogous. They're not the same thing, but they are very similar. And when we adhere to government prognostications and government planning and government explanations and government providing things for us, we lose the power over ourselves that is the gift of our Creator. And when we allow the so-called benefits of making everybody college ready by adopting Common Core standards that are created by people who have never educated anyone in their lives, we show that we are far along that road to happy, contented slavery. And we ought to walk about bowing and scraping and saying, yes, Massa, anything you say, Massa, because we are definitely going to be in that position. And that is not racist, ladies and gentlemen. That is merely a clear view of what is coming down the pike if we do not stand up for what we believe in. I do this radio show, ladies and gentlemen, because I am not powerful. I am not rich. I am not young and energetic enough to go out and stump and run for office or even attend all the city council meetings and canvass people and so on and so forth like my hero Linda Sills does in California. And I honor her for that, and I wish I had her energy, but I don't have it. What I do have is a voice. And I use that voice to speak what I believe to be true. And I have, thank God, an education that gave me the tools I needed to continue to educate myself, which I have done throughout my life. Every single day I live, there is something I have to learn about. Even something as simple as a slight change in a website through which I might pay a bill, or a new version of Microsoft Security, whatever, that has to be downloaded to my computer. New procedures at my doctor's office. New traffic patterns in my town. I learn every moment that I am alive, as does every single one of us. And when we deliberately tell our children that they don't have to learn, what is going to happen to them and their world? My friend Rod put it nicely. Freedom is worth dying for. Slavery is not worth living for. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is why I do this show. Why I talk about things like Common Core and the insanity of progressive educational methods and the handcuffing and gagging of good teachers who finally get so frustrated they leave the profession to hacks who are only there to mouth progressive infomercials and get paid and get benefits. And that's what's happening also. If you look at a lot of conservative sites, the assumption is always that all teachers are irremediably liberal, all teachers are right on board with this, all teachers think Arne Duncan is, you know, God's gift to the world. Well, I can tell you they don't. The number of teachers I work with who are conservatives far outweighs the number of teachers who are liberal. Administrators is a different story. It isn't the classroom teachers, ladies and gentlemen, who are mainly and mostly pushing their progressive liberal agenda on your children. Because if they do that, they get promoted to administration. Because our public schools are a bureaucracy. They are, as Tolkien described Saruman's fortress of Isengard, a pale child's toy or slave's copy of the dark lord's tower of Barad-dûr. Our public schools are a bureaucracy that is a child's toy or a slave's copy of the progressive bureaucracy cog in a machine Borg collective of Washington, D.C. And in order to rise within that bureaucracy, you have to buy into progressive educational theory and practice and money. You have to pander. And those who do not, those who believe in the individual and what teaching is supposed to be, either get the hell out of the profession as soon as they can when they discover they're not allowed to teach, or they stay in it in hopes that maybe there'll be a student here and there that they can plant a spark in until they retire after 30 years. Or they buy into it and give lip service to it so they can rise in the bureaucracy and either get paid a hell of a lot more and have more influence, or maybe change things. The ones who don't agree with it usually don't stay in their positions as principals or assistant principals very long. Because if they're outspoken enough and conservative enough to say this is wrong, they will have every parent descending on them and complaining that their sweet, adorable little child who has this little problem is being mistreated and made to feel bad because he can't pass Algebra 1 when he can't add 3 plus 5 and get 8 reliably twice in a row. And it's the teacher's fault. If you have ever existed, worked in a workplace where you were given authority and responsibility over certain things, and then when you carried out your responsibilities and used your authority to do so, and been told that you had violated somebody's feelings and were either demoted or fired because of it, you probably would say, thank God I don't have to work here anymore. Well, this is what's happening in our public schools. Over and above the deliberate dumbing down, the denial of reading as the most important way to educate oneself, which is what Common Core does, teachers are being held hostage. They are being told by the media, by the administration of their own schools, by the parents, by the federal government, that they are somehow or other totally responsible for what every child in their classroom learns. In other words, the child has no responsibility whatsoever. Everything is the teacher. Well, fortunately, the school that I work in hasn't gotten quite that bad. It's leaning in that direction. I have a very dear friend who works in the local high school, and they are not so far over that line as yet. They still fail you if you flunk every test. The middle school attitude is not quite as sensible, shall we say. But then again, in middle school, we have gazillions of IEPs and behavioral disabilities to deal with, too, which either get kicked out of high school after the first month or, you know, quit because they get some girl pregnant. I've got a caller online. I think that's my friend Linda. Hello.
Hi, how are you? From good
I'm doing
sunny
fine.
California.
Yeah, and how is sunny California?
It's fabulous, except for we have Jerry Brown signing stupid things into law the other day.
Yeah, I saw that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which is going to be a colossal fail because everything the government touches turns to you-know-what. And
are we talking about the gender identity choose-your-own-bathroom crap?
Oh, Lord, yes. That was the one. Now, the other one, look, these guys, and they're implementing Common Core here. In fact, my niece has two young girls in the god-awful public schools, one's 6 and one's 8 years old. I know, I feel so bad for them. I saw this thing, and it was posted on Facebook by one of my friends here who, all of us in these groups are fighting Common Core, we're fighting Agenda 21, we're fighting everything we can get our hands on. And
good girl.
So they're posting things about these things, and they've got YouTube videos showing the curriculum and the textbooks highlighting mm-hmm. what's being told to these kids. And one of the things was, and this is like a 2 to 3 minute video, so you could actually get someone to listen to it and watch it without losing mm-hmm. their attention span. So
yeah, uh-huh. That's
they,
the other part.
The other thing was talking about the feelings. You know, everything is done. It was like putting on some kind of a theatrical show of, you know, not, and they did that too, but that was the, you know, the Gaia Earth fairies. They were doing
yeah.
that in one school. But this was done also in the textbooks, talking about how nothing is relating to actual learning. It's all about, well, how do we affect the other people? In other words, if
uh-huh.
we're not politically correct, and we say this, and they're actually trying to utilize Goebbels and Bernays's propaganda stuff to use on other students and other people. I mean,
yes.
this whole thing was, you know, the
yes.
Kaczynski nudge, shove, and shoot. I mean, it was just
yes.
horrific. And
exactly.
I sent this to my niece, and I said, are your kids being taught this? And she said, yep. And I have not had a conversation with her because I couldn't get her alone. So apparently
mm-hmm.
she's not taking them out of there and she's letting this go on. I don't understand
it. Oh, my God.
This was 3 years ago, that evil, I think steroid strudel was just ending up his, you know, stint as governor, and he signed SB 48. We fought it hard. We fought it so hard, but we couldn't do it. Too many libtards around the LGBT thing, K-12,
yeah.
they're pushing that
yes.
down their throats.
I know it.
There's,
I know it.
Out of, I have a whole thing on, because I found out about this and I sent them a pretty nasty letter in snail mail, because it was called it's Orange County somewhere in Huntington Beach, I think it was. It's called Teacher Created Materials, and I'm telling you, it is just right out of Alinsky. It is so,
mm-hmm.
and Mark,
mm-hmm.
it was just, they are shoving this green stuff down these kids' throats. It's evil. They're lying
oh,
to them
I know
about
it is.
Capitalism. It's evil. And did you hear about New York's Common Core, the colossal failure?
Uh-huh.
The marks, the percentage of, you know,
yes.
like it went down to 12%
high school graduates. Yep.
Oh,
yep.
my
I did.
God. Because of Common Core. So,
exactly.
Yeah, horrible.
Because you cannot control an intelligent, informed, educated population. You can't
right.
use the threat of force to people who can think, Linda. And this is why tonight's topic about literature and reading classic literature.
Oh, my God.
Because if you read anything beyond a comic book, you get exposed to the understanding
right.
of history and how different despotic governments or individuals have controlled a populace. To the point that it
mm-hmm.
has fed their own power. And eventually that populace begins to see something. The cave opens out. And what
mm-hmm.
gives them that cave opening out is access to written material that can be smuggled
right.
from one person
right.
to another. You can read Fahrenheit 451, for God's
yes,
sake.
Yes, that's exactly where I was going. I knew you were going to go there, because what these people are
yep.
doing, what they
yep.
are proposing, these people are book burners. And
yes,
I don't care who hears me say it. It's the
they
truth.
Are.
And it's evil.
They are.
And
did
I don't
you,
care whether
did
it was
you notice
Stalin or Hitler
was,
or whoever. It's evil.
There was something on, I think it was on The Blaze, a school system somewhere in England has banned Hamlet because it's just too terribly violent. Well, yeah,
oh
it is.
God.
There are like six corpses on the stage at the end of the fifth act, but that's
you'll
the whole
tell
point.
It's Macbeth. I mean, geez,
yeah.
my
yeah,
God.
That's the whole point. Do not read anything that might make you feel bad. Do not say anything that would make anybody feel bad. Don't say you don't like this. It'll hurt somebody's feelings. So sit there and eat your beets. Well, I'll be damned if I'll eat my beets. I don't like beets. So obviously, I'm the next one in the tumbril and off to the guillotine.
What's happening is beyond. And as far as, I mean, the classics are, to me, it's sacrosanct, and I believe that they should be required reading. And as far as history and geography,
what?
Oh, my God.
Tell Tell you what, Linda, if they put me in the tumbril and haul me out to the guillotine, when I get up on top of that scaffold and they're getting ready to lower the blade, I'm going to do Sidney Carton's speech from Tale of Two Cities. I swear to God, it would be so apropos. It is a far, far better thing I do than I have ever done. It is a far, far better life I go to than I have ever known. And 99% of the howling mob won't know, will think I invented it.
Yeah, well, sure. Of course.
Yeah. So
it's
if nothing
pretty,
else, I'll go out as brilliant. My sister,
you can create your own blaze of glory. I know.
Yeah.
It's so sad. I mean, what's happening?
My sister-in-law called me last night, and we were talking about some of my ideas about how to train a husband. And she was on the other
funny.
End of the phone, and there was this silence when I was discussing the fact that the masculine thinking pattern is to, there's a big dragon, pick up a rock and bash it. And the feminine thinking
mm-hmm.
pattern is, wait a minute, it might be a friendly dragon. Maybe if I offer it something to eat, it'll guard the house. And she sat there for a minute. She said, you know, you ought to write a book. You have such a unique view of the universe. Write this stuff down. No, I'm not going to write
funny.
This
down. That's funny. Oh, my gosh. So,
it's
I mean,
the best way I
how,
know to describe the difference in between the way women
right.
think and the way men think.
It's true.
And,
but as
and
far
but
as
that thing.
And, you know, the way that you and I were fortunate enough to not be run around by these progressive book burners, and we
yes,
did get to have this fabulous education that we do have by absorbing these and taking them into our little bosoms and loving every word of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the geography and the history of the founding, and even prior to that, why and how and who, you know,
mm-hmm.
what motivated these people, and who was
mm-hmm.
George Whitfield?
How did they live?
Who
why
was,
did they do this?
Yeah, and,
yes.
and who was Frederick Douglass and all of these people?
Mm-hmm.
My God, if you don't, there's no logical sense to any of it. There's no continuity. There's nothing.
None whatsoever. It's also...
My God.
It's if our kids are dumbed down the way they're being dumbed down now, they're not going to be knowledgeable enough to be able to figure out that this is the same old Hitler-esque crap wrapped
yep.
up in shiny new cellophane with a pretty uh-huh. bow on it. It is
yep.
identical to what he did in Berlin in the 1930s. It is
I know.
His playbook, for God's sake. But because
yes.
history has devolved into three pages on, oh, nasty us, we bombed Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and leave out the Bataan Death March and the subjugation
yep.
of the Philippines by the Japanese, because Japanese
sure.
people are just different. It's and yes, they are. And their society at the time encouraged them to kill anybody who wasn't Japanese because they were firmly convinced that they were the direct children of God and the rest of us belonged to them.
Sure. Well, yeah, they
because
had,
they didn't
had,
have access to reading anything that their
right.
rulers didn't want them to know.
Exactly. They had eons and hundreds of years of
total isolation.
What do you call it? Well,
total
not
isolation.
Only that, they did because of the islands and the fact that, and they had warlords. I mean, the samurai warlords period. My
they
God.
Did, and
they were ruthless.
Japan was a closed nation. No one was permitted. From
right.
outside
right.
of Japan to live there, unless they were in effect a prisoner. There's a book that my book club read last year or the year before. It's a young adult book based on a true story of a young Japanese boy who was shipwrecked and picked up by an American whaling ship and came to America and spent many years there and finally went back to Japan and was responsible for easing up and opening up Japan to interaction
mm-hmm.
with the rest of the world, because it takes place from about 1835 to about 1860 or so. So it was this young man's exposure to a totally alien culture that he
sure.
learned from, took back home, and exposed his people to. Because...
Right.
Whenever you lock people up in a box of ignorance, you can pretty much get them to do anything you tell them to with that governmental
sure.
force or the threat of it. When
right.
you tell them that there are things they don't need to know, you are telling
right.
them, yes, be happy, you're a slave, we'll take care of you.
Exactly, because they have nothing to compare it to. So they have
exactly.
no point of reference, and this is Plato's cave.
That is what the progressives want to create. That is their
right.
utopia.
Well, they've done a good job with that black box in the living room from 1954 on.
Oh, yes.
I
was so grateful the other day. I was sitting here listening to the asininity of commercial television and the subliminal political messages that come through in the advertising and the shows. And I was thinking back to when I was in grade school. I lived in northern Michigan, and we had two channels, CBS and NBC. They came on at 7 o'clock in the morning and went off promptly at 11. And about the only thing on was either Milton Berle, wrestling, Howdy Doody, Kukla, Fran, and Ollie, or old Our Gang comedies. You know, that was children's programming. And believe me, if our kids behaved the way the kids did in the Our Gang comedies, they'd be in jail or in rehab or something. But I wasn't exposed to the constant brainwashing. And the 6-8 minutes of whatever program and then 40,000 commercials, bang, bang, bang. Is it any wonder that the attention span of a gnat is longer than that of an eighth grader?
And that the kids think that their entire existence revolves around materialism. And it has been that way for eons. Horrible.
There is nothing wrong with a healthy respect for materialism, because materialism gives us the comforts and the leisure to pursue other things. But when it becomes a replacement for bettering oneself as an individual and a replacement for the values of the divine, that's when you get power of value.
Because what the problem is, like you say, and you know better than most of us because you deal with children, when you have a child from, say, age 6 or 5 or whatever through high school, they're not mature enough to make the distinction yet that these people are lying to them and manipulating them because they're not mature.
They're also being told to go home and re-educate their parents. That's the other part of all of this Common Core crap that most parents do not understand is going on. Because I'll bet you, if you took apart every single one of the lesson plans and every single one of the textbooks and any ancillary materials that go with them, there's somewhere in every single thing they do, make sure, talk about this with your mom and dad. Explain to them this. Part of it. Go home and re-educate your parents. In effect, that same thing was done quasi-accidentally in the first part of the 20th century with all the children from the flood of immigration that came in. They went to the American public schools. They learned English. They went home. They were the ones who went out and talked to tradespeople and so on for mom and dad who only spoke Lithuanian or Polish or Czechoslovakian or something of that nature. And mom and dad basically took a lot longer to learn because their adult brains didn't absorb the change as quickly and as easily as the youngsters did. Anybody who has any knowledge of child psychology or any knowledge of human psychology, any knowledge or life experience of living with other human beings knows that when you are young, everything is new. Everything is bright and shiny. Everything stands out. It's not dull, humdrum, I can ignore that. Kids don't ignore anything, particularly what you want them to ignore.
So they are easily plied and molded. So when you mentioned Al Gore, it also reminded me of the guillotine you just spoke of.
Wouldn't you love that? I could also do my Madame Defarge imitation. I'll pick up some knitting needles and some yarn and so on and so forth.
I love that one.
Can't you see? Madame Defarge.
Yeah.
Remember Madame Defarge? Yes, with her little coated knitting. I can play that. My thespian desires were never for lead roles. I was always, if I'd gone into acting at all, it would have been as a supporting actress. Because I always wanted to play the villain. It's probably why I'm good at what I do in ISS. If anybody needs a villain, that does. And, my public has to be a little bit scary, which is why I wear my long black cape and, you know, on Halloween or whatever else I can get around to it.
However, thank you for doing a great show today, and I'm going to let you wind up because I know you're running out of time, but thanks so much, and hopefully others
thanks
can
for
hear this
calling,
on the podcast.
Honey.
Yeah. All right. Honey.
Thank
Talk to you,
you
later.
So much for calling. You take care of yourself now. Guard yourself from all
okay.
the libtards in California. Bye-bye, sweetie.
Bye.
Well, that was my dear friend Linda Sills, ladies and gentlemen, my heroine, because she does everything in her power to stand up and speak truth, unafraid, with incredible courage. And as I said, I envy her energy. I wish I had it. I don't. So my forum is right here. This is my opportunity to give you the benefit of what I've learned, what I think, and what I see. I cannot guarantee you perfect safety. I cannot guarantee you perfect comfort. I cannot guarantee you happiness. I can't guarantee any of those things for my cats, let alone for my fellow human beings. But I can guarantee you that when I say something, it is because I believe it to be true. And when I tell you about something, I am basing it on material that I have read or something I have seen. And if you have a different take or if you have information that I don't, I ask you to call or join us in the chat room and tell me if you have information. If you have an outlook or an experience that can clarify this amazingly complex, incredibly beautiful, and equally ugly universe in which we live, exercise your freedom of speech and let us all know about it. Because that, too, is a part of a gift we have been given by our Creator. The gift of life and the human spirit. And that inalienable right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness is inalienable because being alive and being human and being free to think and speak and learn is how we will hopefully have a successful pursuit and actually catch happiness. Because it won't be given to us on a silver platter or in a pretty box with a shiny ribbon. Nobody can make us happy, ladies and gentlemen, except ourselves. And when we allow ourselves to believe that anything other than ourselves and our Creator can give us happiness, we open the door to the slave collar or the Borg collective. And I am just stubborn and egotistical and old enough to say no thank you to both of them. So I'll be back again next week here on Blog Talk Radio for Patriot Education. And I urge you to visit our website, www.patriotfamilies, that's patriotfamilies.com, where you'll meet other people who believe that the most important thing you can be is yourself, and that you have gifts to share. Please join us next week for Patriot Education. Visit our website, www.patriotfamilies.com. And my thanks to all the great folks in the chat room, Ron, Rod, and Linda, and Lonnie. I am so thrilled that you all could join me this evening, and I look forward to seeing you back again next Thursday. As always, ladies and gentlemen, I wish you all of the best that life can give. I ask that you be everything you can be. And I thank you from the bottom of my heart for being here tonight. My greatest love to my greatest fan. Good night, everyone. I'll see you next week. Blessed be.
Blog Talk Radio and Patriot Family is where you need to be if you want to be informed and inspired 5 days a week. On Monday at 7:30 p.m., you can listen to the Constitution Hour. On Tuesday at 7 p.m., you can listen to Patriot Family Chat. On Wednesday at 7 p.m., you can listen to Right from the Left Coast. On Thursday at 6 p.m., you can listen to Patriot Education. And on Friday at 7 p.m., you can listen to Exposed But Never Forgotten. All times are Eastern Standard Time. Hope to see you there.